I raised the long, curved bow, and with two fingers pulled back its string, all the while resisting the urge to remove one of the silver-shafted arrows nestled in the quiver slung over my shoulder. "It would be so easy," I said, a sigh escaping my lips as I gazed across the ballroom. "Too easy." My husband, his dark eyes sparkling, lowered my weapon with a single finger. "It would be beneath you, Emily." "It's not often one is permitted to arm oneself at a ball," I said. "Fancy dress is a marvellous thing, and as such, my taking full advantage of the situation is nothing short of strict necessity. Without seeing an arrow, my prey may not realize she has been made a target." "My dear girl, were you actually planning to shoot the dreadful woman, I would hand the arrows to you myself. As things stand, however, she's far too thick to understand that by raising your bow you're putting her on notice." Colin Hargreaves had no patience for gossips, and I had set my sights on one of society's worst, the lady whose lack of discretion had caused all of society to learn that Colin had refused the Queen's offer of a dukedom some 6 months ago. The awkwardness of the incident had been compounded by the fact that my mother had encouraged Her Majesty to dangle the prize before him, and now both she and the Queen were embarrassed, put out, and displeased. Not with my husband, however. So far as the two of them were concerned, he was incapable of any wrongdoing. They were convinced that I must have motivated his inexplicable refusal, and forgave him for indulging his wife. Although the Queen did make some quiet comments to him about how even she had, on occasion, bowed to the will of her dear Albert. My mother was less forgiving. She refused to see me for 3 months. I bore the loss with what I hope appeared more like reasonable equanimity than obvious relief. "I'm not certain one ought to take military advice from Beau Brummel," I said. I couldn't deny that Regency fashion, with its snug trousers, well-cut coats, and tall, gleaming boots, suited my husband's athletic form well. Nonetheless, Colin and I had argued about his choice of costume. "You should have dressed as an Homeric hero." "Hector, I assume." "You were perfectly free to go as Achilles, if that better suited you," I said. "All I did was remind you that such a choice would necessitate your sleeping at your club instead of at home. I understand some husbands prefer that sort of arrangement." He put his arm around my waist and pulled me close. I shall never be one of those husbands. "I am, however, stung that you could suggest I choose Achilles over Hector. You know me too well to make such a monumental error. Did we not cover this ground thoroughly before we were married?" "Of course we did," I said. "I should never have considered your proposal if your views on the subject were not first utterly clear to me. Tonight, though, our hostess instructed us to dress in costumes allegorical or historical." "Dating before 1815, Colin interrupted. "Yes, I'm well aware of the fact. It is why I specifically tied my cravat in a fashion favoured by Mr. Brummel prior to that year. My entire ensemble is an exercise in historical dress. So far as satisfying the technical details of our instructions, yes, but I stand by my belief that you are violating the spirit of the Duchess's request." "Riddle me, my sweet love, what matters to society more than fashion? And who mattered more to gentlemen's fashion than Beau Brummel? I argue that my choice of costume is of the greatest historical significance to the current gathering." "You are impossible," I said, standing on my tiptoes to give him a quick kiss on the cheek. "Be careful not to take your role as Artemis too seriously, Emily. I have plans for you later that don't include still finding ourselves in this wretched house at dawn. I see Bainbridge making eyes at you from across the room. He looks rather like a sheep, so I shall leave you to deal with it. I'm long overdue for a cigar. Make sure to promise no one but me your last waltzes." "I'm not about to let you hide out until then," I said. He took my hand, raised it to his lips, lingering over it too long, just as he had in the days of our courtship, and my body, just as it had then, tingled from the tips of my toes to the top of my head. Jeremy Sheffield, Duke of Bainbridge, and one of my dearest childhood friends, had not been making eyes at me from across the room or anywhere else. Jeremy thoroughly enjoyed the freedom provided by his status as Bachelor Duke as much as he thoroughly dreaded the confines of marriage. I might be carrying the bow of the goddess of the hunt tonight, but Jeremy kept himself armed daily with what he viewed as weapons in his fight against matrimony. I was one of them, the girl he could never wed, a semi-permanent distraction that half the mothers in London were convinced kept him from proposing to their extremely eligible and willing daughters. They believed I had once spurned him, and that his heart had not yet recovered. The old dragons might sympathise with him now, so long as they believed it could enhance their daughters' chances with him later, but pining forever would not be allowed. This fit nicely with my friend's own plans, as Jeremy had no intention of leaving his dukedom forever without an heir. He was simply too committed at present to his love of debauchery and irresponsibility to settle down. Only once he had achieved his oft-stated goal of being recognised as the most useless man in England would he agree to find a wife.